Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. I am the Reverend Sandra L. Ingham, but it's fine to call me Sandy, please. Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society aspires to be both an open-hearted and an open-minded congregation, and it generally lives up to that, I am finding. We welcome people of every ethnic and religious background. Whatever your color, sexual orientation, gender, or family structure, we welcome you, no matter what your age, or your abilities, or your inabilities. On Sundays, we provide a wide variety of services, and they're presented either by a Prairie member, or by myself, or by a member of the wider community, and that's what will be happening today when we have Megan. I would need some help. Arsbecker. I meant to ask you that before we became formal here. Presenting, and I will give you a little information about her right before she speaks. And I'll start these and then.
Okay. May we be reminded here of our highest aspirations and inspired to bring our gifts of love and service to the altar of humanity. May we know once again that we are not isolated beings, but connected in mystery and miracle to the universe, to this community, and to each other. Anonymous.
Thank you.
O light of life, be kindled again in our hearts, as we meet together this morning to celebrate the joy of human community seeking a wholeness that extends beyond ourselves. Samuel A. Trumbore.
This book, this story, is set in like 1931. And what was happening in the United States in 1931 was bad stuff. Does anybody think they know what it was? The Great Depression. You are correct. And so this story is set in Africa, where there was a man teaching from America, and so this is how the Africans, some people in an African village, learned about the Great Depression. You know what the Great Depression? You know what the Great Depression is? No jobs, lots of people hungry. It was a sad time. It was difficult in the United States.
Now it's my pleasure to introduce Megan Arsbecker.
Yep.
Whoa. Megan has been working with Serve for just over 2 years. Last week, some of you wanted to know what Serve stood for, and Megan, you could tell us that if you want to. And although we did get most of us got an email from our director of religious education explaining what the acronym was. Megan studied international studies here at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and became affiliated with the Serve store, which I hope we'll hear a bit about, on Monroe Street here in Madison, and worked there as assistant manager for 1.5 years when she then transitioned into Serve's corporate office, working on development and fundraising. And she says she enjoys working at Serve because of its global impact and ability to change people's lives through sustainable and empowering initiatives. Megan, welcome. Well, good morning.
Oh, wonderful. Well, good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for having me. I know Serve has been here in the past, and hopefully we'll talk about some new things today that you guys don't know about Serve, and hopefully I won't pass out up here. No, I'm kidding. So I'll just do a brief introduction of Serve for anyone who doesn't know, and then we can talk more specifically about some of our development work, particularly in Bangladesh, Nepal, and here in Madison. So Serve is a fair trade nonprofit company located here in Madison, and our mission is to eradicate poverty wherever it resides by offering opportunity, employment, marketing training, skills development, to artisans and farmers throughout the developing world who are low income and wouldn't otherwise have these kinds of opportunities. We've been practicing our core values for 64 years, so we've been around for a long time, and we are actually one of the founding members of Fair Trade here in the US. And some of our core values, well, I should say, SERV used to stand for Sales, Exchange, Refugee, Rehabilitation, and Vocation, which you can imagine was just marketing gold. and so when we officially incorporated or registered as a nonprofit in 1999, we kind of dropped the acronym and just became SERV, and everything that can, you know, bring up as associations for serving people, for serving communities, and things like that. So we have been in Madison for about 20 years, and we have two shops now, one on Monroe Street and a second location that just opened up on State Street. And so you can find our full selection of products there. But we work directly with all of our artisan and farmer partners, and we really focus on improving their quality of life through economic, social justice, and really offering them the opportunity to be the entrepreneurs that they want to be. And we also have a very strong culture of craft tradition. When we bring on new groups, when we work with partners, we really want to take skills that they already have, skills and products that they're already developing, and bring those to the market here in the US. We like to think that we're kind of a reverse model. We follow a demand in the developing world to make products and have businesses, and that just happens to fit with a market here in the US. We're not developing these products to sell them to people. We're bringing in these products to showcase our artisans and really offer them the employment and opportunities that they deserve. And we work very closely with all of our partners. Partnership and collaboration is one of our major core values. And we're talking with our groups almost every day, whether it's our product development team or myself or our international development team. We really do have a very close relationship based on trust. And I think so many questions that I get are, well, how do you really enforce fair trade? How do you really guarantee all these are being met? And it's through that long-term relationship. We're also very focused on sustainable development, whether that be through eco initiatives, using recycled materials, using the lowest impact methods of shipping, and things like that. So, yeah, we're kind of located all around the world. All of the orange highlighted areas on this map are where our partner groups are. So you can see we are kind of clustered in Southeast Asia, Sub-Saharan Africa, and South America. But we do have 5 groups here in the US, as well as a couple in Europe and the Middle East. So something that a lot of people don't know about SERV is, you know, selling things and selling products is only half of what our business is. We are very, very much a development organization. And that's what we do fundraising for. And that's what we reinvest the income that we have from our sales in our groups. And so we sort of have 3 tiers of development areas that we work on. Hopefully it doesn't. Well, the 3 tiers of development work that we do. The top tier are kind of our major initiatives, and we sponsor typically between 5 and 7 of those every year, which I'll talk about in a couple of minutes. And then we have plant to seed projects, which are kind of the projects that put the tools of change and the tools of employment in people's hands. So that will be buying a new kiln for one of our groups in Nepal, or sending new tools to our jewelry groups in you know, Kenya. Things like that, things that really give them the tools that they need to run those businesses. And then the 3rd tier are all of the projects that are partner sponsored, and they're partner initiated projects. So one of the major reasons why we bring on new groups is because of their ability to affect change in the communities where they work. And so we want to make sure they have well-established, you know, education programs or, you know, women's empowerment programs, things like that. And they come to us regularly saying, hey, we have this new initiative that we want to sponsor to build a school or a new well. And then we try and help them fund those projects. We really try and, particularly with our major development work, is to offer our groups trainings and business training programs, marketing trainings, things like that can help them grow their businesses. We work with people on all spectrums of the business scale, from very small groups with, you know, 12 artisans in rural Uganda, to very large groups in India that have almost 10,000 artisans. So we're all over the spectrum there, and because we work so closely with them, we can try and get a feel for where they are on that business spectrum. And so some groups are better suited for plant a seeds projects where they need a, you know, new weaving mechanism or a new loom or something like that. Whereas other groups, they already have designers on staff to help them develop new products, and we just need to help get them, you know, understanding the trends here in the U.S., colors that work, and offer them opportunities in that area. So it really is a full-scale and varied approach that we try and take based on the needs of our groups. So I will talk about three of our major projects. And the first one, which I think personally I am most passionate about this year, is a design training that we're hosting in Bangladesh. I think after what happened this spring with factory collapses and fires and just seeing the destruction of people's lives because of mismanagement and this, you know, awful profit-seeking push for the lowest cost system that we function in, I think for me it was just heartbreaking to see that. I know CERV is not a company that would ever put people in those kind of situations, but sometimes you feel helpless. Like, well, what can we do to make this better? How can we get people out of this system? And for CERV, the only thing that, you know, we feel that we can do, we're already practicing the business practices that these large companies need to practice. So one of the things that we are trying to do is offer training to our program or to our partners there in the hopes that they will be able to grow and bring on more artisans and bring people out of that sweatshop labor system. And so we will be hosting a design training there for our four Bangladesh partners, as well as any other businesses, small workshops that want to attend to come to this training. It'll be focused primarily on design and marketing, in the hopes of, like I said, growing those businesses, increasing their purchase orders from international partners, by preventing or presenting trend reports and helping develop new samples, which we've seen have actually been a huge, huge success in some of our other organizations. For example, one of the design trainings we hosted in the past, the group went from having no products on our top 50 sellers to having three, and they increased their sales by 141% in 1 year. And they were able to bring on 10 new artisans, build an entire new workshop. So we do see a lot of impact. It doesn't seem like offering a design training or a marketing program would make such a difference, but it really can, because those are the skills that help grow those businesses exponentially. So some of the goals that we'll see, hopefully, out of this design training are improving the designs that our groups are currently producing, really expanding on the lines that they already have. We also hope, like I said, that this will increase purchase orders from CERV, but also from other international buyers. We also hope to see a lot of these other non-CERV partners attend, so they can learn about what fair trade is if they're not already a fair trade organization. They can learn about how offering artisans increased wages, better opportunities can really change people's lives for the positive and prevent these kind of disasters from happening. Our groups in Bangladesh keep telling us that, you know, we hope this is the wake-up call that people need, that people see, you know, we are so affected by this. Like, most of our groups are in Dhaka, which is where the collapses were and things like that. And so for them, I mean, they said they were glued to their TV. They couldn't believe it. The city just shut down. There's so much devastation. And I think for them, that was really the moment, like, we're doing what's right. How can we get more people to come on and be like us? So hopefully this program will be an opportunity for them to do that. We're seeing a huge demand from our partners actually saying, recycled materials, I mean, we can go and pick them up at the local garbage dump for really cheap, you know, what kind of products can we make? And so one of our groups, hopefully, after this training, will be working on recycled sari, fabric materials, so pillows made out of recycled saris, blankets and throws, and possibly even some jewelry. I've seen some of the mock-ups by our product development team, which is here in Madison, and they're the ones who will be going to the design training of some of the ideas they have to share with them, and that was definitely one of the things they talked about, was recycled materials are popular here, something people are interested in, that are good for the environment, and cheaper to buy for our partners. I mean, it's easier to buy the raw materials if they're recycled. So the stores actually only account for about 10% of our annual sales. So most of our sales do come from our catalog, and I did bring some of the new catalog, which are sitting out right in the lobby for everyone to look at. But we send out about 1, roughly a million catalogs a year around the U.S., and so that's really the driver of our sales, is people looking at the catalog, buying through the catalog, and buying through our website. But we also do wholesale to other fair trade organizations out there. So you'll see Serve products at other little fair trade stores or gift shops all around the U.S. We are a member of this, it's very new, but it's called the Artisan Alliance, and it's based here in the U.S., and it's a bunch of fair trade companies, small artisan cooperatives, but also large companies like Walmart is a member of the Artisan Alliance. And so we hope to start having discussions like that during our Alliance meetings about, well, you know, we have resources, we have been a member of the fair trade world for a long time. You know, is there anything we can help you with? You know, what skills can we bring to you? Whether it would be consulting or creating special product lines for these big companies, because I think that's where our specialization is. You know, our specialization is working so closely with our artisan partners and bringing those skill sets to life. And hopefully, by working more closely with larger companies like Walmart and others, maybe we can institute some change through something like that. We'll see. I don't know if we have enough clout outside of that Artisan Alliance group, but perhaps. So one of our other initiatives for this year is solar panels in Nepal. And so one of the things that is one of our long-term goals and one of our core values is increasing sustainability. And for many of our groups in Nepal, as well as many other countries, access to a regular electricity grid is just not a reality. I mean, they're located in rural areas. They're experiencing power outages of 4 to 18 hours a day. And it's making it really, really hard for our groups to communicate with other buyers and other, you know, international organizations, because they need that power for their computers and things like that in their operations facilities. And so we're trying to do almost like a test run in Nepal and buying solar panels for one of our smaller groups there, who works with about 450 artisans, and trying to power 100% of their operations with solar panels, and documenting the whole process to see if it's something that we can institute for more of our groups, not just in Nepal, but elsewhere. And so we hope to buy, it's somewhere between 20 and 40 solar panels for their workshops, for their weaving facilities, their paper making facilities, as well as their offices. And hopefully that we can institute this program elsewhere and really make it something that we're recognized for, is offering alternative energy sources for our groups so they can just skip, you know, that the nasty process of getting attached to a grid that's powered by, you know, fossil fuels and it's not helping the environment. Can we just skip over that and take them from having no power to having totally 100% eco power? So that's another one of our projects for this year. And then the last one, which is our annual, we've done this project 4 years in a row now, and it actually takes place here in Madison. And so one of our other major initiatives, like I said, that's an annual event for us, is hosting Design Camp here in Madison. And we actually pay to bring our artisan partners here into the US and meet with our design team and our marketing team here in Madison, as well as design professionals from the Art Institute in Chicago and people from IKEA and Kohler and things like that, to offer them a week-long intensive training focused on who is the Serve customer, who are US customers, how can you take products that you guys have and modernize them, maybe changing a color, adding a stripe, something really simple that can take their product from being kind of okay to being a top seller, and really offering them that intensive in-country view of who those customers are and what products are selling has proven a huge success. All of our partners who participated in the past, we've done it for 4 years times 4 to 5 people, so roughly what, 15 to 20 people who have come, we've seen special collections from all of them that have seen considerable success in our catalog. And we're really proud of the opportunities that that brings to them. One of our group's members, her name is Lon, is actually coming back this year to teach our other groups about the impact that Design Camp has had on her and how she instituted the things that she learned at the first Design Camp in their organization and how they've seen that happen. So really helping our groups learn from our other groups and making those international connections is really a fun and, for me, inspiring thing to see, especially because it happens here in Madison. And so we're having an event for Design Camp at our Monroe Street store on Tuesday, September 17th. I think that's the right date, right? And you are all cordially invited to come and join us and meet with our four participants who you see there on the left side. We have two participants. The top two that you see there are from Vietnam, from our two groups in Vietnam. And Lan is the woman in the white shirt who has participated in the past. So we're really excited to have her back. And then Esther, who is a designer from Bombolulu, is our first African participant. So we are very excited to have her here. She works with jewelry artisans in Kenya, in what's the capital? In Nairobi. In Nairobi, Kenya, who are physically or mentally handicapped. And so these are people who have no opportunity for jobs in Kenya at all. And she's one of the founding members of that group, and we're very excited to see what she will bring to the table and be able to institute in her organization. And then the last one there is Punet, who is from Tara Projects in Delhi, India. And so he will be here as well. They have a very large product line. So he's got his work cut out for him in designing new jewelry and stone products and things like that. But this event will be open to the public at our Monroe Street store. And it's an opportunity to really meet and greet with these participants and hear their stories, hear about their organizations, and the opportunities that Design Camp and partnering with Serve have helped provide to them, and how fair trade really can make a difference in their lives and the artisans that they work with. So, yeah. And then I have just another slide here. I don't know how much time I've got left. But these are just some of our other general social development programs that we do to work with our groups. And like I said, I mean, we've got lots of amazing stories from all of our partners, because that's, you know, what fair trade is all about, is building strong communities through employment and through, you know, the sales and marketing of products, but also through the other opportunities that that can provide through training programs and other opportunities. So how can you help us? Obviously, just spreading the word about Serve is for us the best method out there. We're not loaded with money to spend on advertising, and so doing speeches like this and letting people know about the work that we do, we find is continually the best way to get new people in our store and get new people involved in what we're doing. Ways that you can help specifically with our development programs: if you've ever been to our store, when they ask you to round up, all of that money goes to our development programs. And so we try and sponsor a different one every month in the store so that people learn more about what we're doing. But always make sure to round up, even that extra 18 cents, 25 cents, it all adds up. So, we don't have any groups technically in Alaska. I think that was probably just highlighted as part of the US. But we do have one of our groups is a Native American group in North Dakota that harvests and grows organic wild rice that we sell for them, as well as, I think, maple syrup and a couple other food products. So most of the groups that we have here in the US, only two of them are Native American Indian populations. That's an ongoing discussion at Serve, because the catalog production is a high expense for us. And I think that we hope to move in the direction of just finding organic web sales. But I mean, after we send out a catalog, we see like $100,000 spikes in our sales on our website and in our catalog. And so for us, it's still really a necessary part of our business. I think we have kind of a few target demographics, you could say. And the traditional Serve customer has been religiously oriented, spiritual people who have found out about Serve through their churches, things like that, and host consignment sales. And that's been a large portion of our customer base for a long time. But I think as fair trade becomes more popular and Serve grows and people have more awareness, we're starting to see a lot more young customers. And I think those are the people who won't shop from catalogs maybe necessarily in the future. And so hopefully we can develop the skills to market our website. I think we don't know quite how to do that yet. So we still need the catalog to drive people to our website. But hopefully, you know, as we improve our, you know, Google ads and all of this stuff I don't even understand, that will be more of a reality, because it is an expense, and it's, I think, doesn't represent the direction that we want to go in being more eco-friendly and things like that. But we're not there yet. Yeah, we used to be formally partnered with Church of the Brethren, actually. That's how we started. And so when we officially became a nonprofit, we became a secular organization, so we broke our ties technically with them. But we still, our warehouse in Maryland is actually on a Church of the Brethren campus, and we still work very closely with Church of the Brethren and attend their annual conference and stuff like that. So we print on all recycled paper, and we print at Quad Graphics, actually.
Hey.
Yeah. Yeah, we print on all recycled paper, and we always try and recommend that people share the catalogs with people, because we don't purchase lists, we don't sell our lists, we don't do anything like that. So all the people that we get are just organic people who find out about us and request a catalog, or a friend told them about it, or a friend recommended that they get one. We had a marketing consultant help us earlier this year, because we went through a big rebranding that was just a huge change for us back in 2004. And we changed our name from A Greater Gift back to Serve, and we had this whole rebranding of our name and, you know, what is the logo going to look like and all this stuff. And I think a lot of it was very helpful for us, but we kind of need to refocus now. And the logo is actually one of the things that they talked about a lot, because you are not the only person who says, Siri, what is this? And have no idea what it is. So hopefully we'll see some changes over the next year as the recommendations that we got from that marketing consultation get implemented. We're a very lean organization. We only have staff of 10 here in Madison, and we do about $10.5 million in sales per year. So that gives you an idea of kind of how tight we are. And we try and keep our fundraising expenses particularly as low as we can so that we can invest as much money as we can in our partner groups. And I guess the only impact stories that we have are kind of, you know, specific to each group and how we can see the impact in perhaps the increase in their purchases or the number of new artisans that they brought on, and trying to understand it like that. But I think that that's one of the things that we need to improve on as we move forward with fundraising. And there's just a myriad of organizations that people can choose from. I think we have a very good reputation with our donors, but for new donors, that's something that they're gonna ask is, well, what is that impact? Like, what is the numbers game behind all of this? You know, how can you see the impact of your investment on people in wherever the money is going to? And I think hopefully we'll get there. You know, I think we've been trying to send more staff members and volunteers to go and visit our groups and capture those stories about impact. Because during the recession, we just didn't have the money to do that, in all honesty. We just couldn't afford to send our staff abroad. We just didn't have that in our budget. And so now that we've sort of pulled out of it, at least enough to get our head above water, we can go and collect those stories and those impacts and really try and see those changes. We've been trying to capture a lot of them on film and photo and really get those faces behind the names and the stories that you're hearing and seeing. I brought a bunch of our newsletters, which, I mean, there's so many stories about where our money goes and how our groups are impacted. And our newsletter is a great place to do that and read about that, because I can't share them all here. But yeah, I brought a bunch of those so you can read a little bit more about what we do. We have a wedding registry as well as like a holiday gift registry on our website and in our store. And so I don't know how much response we see from it, but I think you're right. I think it's a great idea. And one of the things that a lot of people do is they'll make a donation gift, like you said, in someone else's name. And I think that that's what we see a lot of on our gift registry is people who want to make a difference rather than, you know, getting a toaster. Well, great. Thank you guys so much for having me. Yeah, absolutely.
Goods produced under conditions which do not meet a rudimentary standard to decency should be regarded as contraband and not allowed to pollute the channels of international commerce. Greet your neighbor and go in peace.